appreciate that.
Welcome. All right, so we're going to start at the preface and go all the way through the end. Just kidding. All right, so this little reading, we're going to do this reading 2 minutes and then do the prayer. This reading is called Clarity. Can you see a sound?
No.
Can you hear a light?
No.
Can you unite your senses?
Maybe.
Can you turn inward? What we are all seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow. It makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live in equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There is no such thing. Sadness still comes to the wise. But unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all the faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit because few have ever seen those limits, let alone describe them. But let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed. Meditation. Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything that they can know about this weekend. The big book, alcoholism, addiction, the 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so that I may have an open mind and a new experience. Help me see the truth. Amen.
So, everything that you think you know about reality, is wrong. And I can tell you that because I know. And what that reading was saying is that you can't know until you do. You cannot experience what you have not experienced until you experience it. And when you experience that which is truth, that which is the experience that I've had, connection with things that you cannot describe or explain to somebody else without them thinking you're a little bit kooky. That's what that reading's about. You want to time travel, bend reality, work with vision and intent, have the specific things that you want in your life to show up for you, but then realize on the path that you don't want those anymore because they're no longer important. Come on, we can do that. And then you can go to chapter 7, working with others, and start to enlighten them to the experience that you're in the middle of. Now, we would love to continue to dissect each one of these last five chapters to the level that we've done and get you as excited about these last five chapters as we are. But we realize we don't have the time for that. And if in some way you have not heard over the course of this weekend that you need to take the experience that you've had in steps 1 through 9 and apply them to steps 10, 11, and show somebody else how to do it in 12, where you been? Because that's what we've been talking about this entire weekend, is about carrying this message to somebody else. So we'll weave that into what we're going to talk about now, but we're not going to spend a bunch of time talking about the 12th step just as part of the 12th step, because there's three parts to the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, so that's actually working steps 1 through 11 is the first part. We tried to carry this message to other alcoholics and addicts. That's the second part. And then the third part, which most people do not practice or understand, or even they read it, but they don't know it's there. Practice these principles in all of our affairs. Because, guys, it's that third part.
Mm-hmm.
Remember how I said meditation was like the chocolate chips and the whipped cream and the cherry and all that stuff? Well, this is like going to the factory and getting whatever you want. Is that good?
My late grand sponsor used to say that you may want to consider that if you do not meditate on a regular basis, that you do not know God, because the sound, the language, or the sound is silence. It was silent before we came into this world, and I'm willing to bet there's a good chance it's pretty silent on the way out. Just to me, that just seems like the truth. As we talk about step 12 and these principles of practicing principles in all our affairs, I want to read a poem by Samuel Schumacher. He was a gentleman at the Calvary Mission in New York that helped Bill flush the Oxford Group's six steps into 12. And he wrote a poem that I think encapsulates the 12th step. It's called "I Stand at the Door." I stand by the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It is the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use my going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside, and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men, with outstretched, groping hands, feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand by the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door. as starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they have not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in, go way down in the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It is a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements of withdrawal of silence of sainthood. Some must inhabit those inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God and call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in, sometimes venture a little farther in, but my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. There's another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God in the zeal of his house devour them, for God is so very great and asks all of us. And these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled. For the old life, they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do any more. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in. To tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in do not see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I do admire the people who go way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who have not yet found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place, near enough to God to hear him and know he is there, but not so far from the men as to not hear them and remember they are there too. So where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them, but more important for me, one of them, two of them, ten of them, whose hands I am intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I'd rather be a doorkeeper. That is why I stand by the door. And I think that's what we do here. With that 12th step, one of the things that saddens me the most is when I'm sitting at a meeting, after the meeting or before the meeting, and there's a newcomer there who's standing by himself or she's standing by herself, and no one has spoken to him. No one has reached their hand out. Everybody at the group is so caught up in their little cliques and their little friends that they talk to and they communicate day in and day out. They can't get out of themselves enough to be at a group and concentrate on the person that knows nobody, that's on the exterior, on the fringes, and they're about to get clipped by the wolf, and we are so self-absorbed that we're only talking with the same people we talk to all the fucking time. That's why the meetings are there. They're there for us to help the new people. They're there for us to stand by the door and be there when those people show up in that window of grace where they're completely open and they're ready to follow some directions. So,
Ebby was 2 months sober. So somebody brought this up earlier. Need to have a year before I sponsor somebody. I actually found out where that came from, by the way. If that were the case, none of us would be here. Ebby Thatcher had 2 months when he carried the message to Bill. Bill had 6 months when he carried the message to Dr. Bob. Dr. Bob had 2 weeks when he carried the message to Bill Dodson, alcoholic number 3. My first sponsor was 2 months sober. I was 3 months sober. He carried me through the steps because he was further ahead in the steps than I was. I had an experience with the steps, transformed my life. He didn't. He left for 3 years. He came back. Now I'm his sponsor. It's kind of weird how that works. I would say I was probably 5 months sober, 2 months into the steps, and I sponsored my first guy. Now, I wasn't really sponsoring the guy. I was really carrying him to meetings. I wasn't carrying the message to him. I was carrying him to the message. But I learned a lot of that. I learned about how we think and what we do and how we experience that. I was about 6 months sober. Now, I used to believe that the promises were the promises the way that people believe the promises are the promises before I realized they were the night set promises. I used to believe it the way that everybody else believes it. And there was a part of it that I did not believe. I did not believe that no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Nope. That part of the promises I could not believe. I couldn't believe it because there's no way that failed suicide attempt, bankruptcy, multiple foreclosures, failed business, wife that doesn't want to see him anymore, two kids that he hardly gets to see, seven jobs, 6 years. Like, guys, that's not useful to anybody. No way that's useful to anybody. And then this magical weekend happens where my football team's playing in the SEC championship and I keep getting invited to do all sorts of things, but for some reason don't accept any of the offers. And I get a text message Saturday morning that there's a guy at the La Quinta off Holcomb Bridge that's run out of money and needs a place to stay until they can get him into a sober house on Monday morning. And I just happen to be available. I just happen to have a house where, or an apartment where it's not going to inconvenience anybody. I'll help them. No idea what I'm doing. Inquire from all sorts of people. Hadn't done a 12-step call before. Get the guy in my car, and I start telling him my story. And as I'm telling him my story, his head keeps dropping lower and lower and lower, and I think he's getting ready to get sick on the floorboard of my car. I don't know what's going on. Finish my story, and I say, "Now you tell me about, now you tell me your story." And he says, "I don't have to, you just told it to me." What? No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. Jarek and I have actually talked about, if that didn't happen, what happened? What does the trajectory of my life look like? Because I realized in that moment that I was useful. I realized that all of that stuff that I didn't want to share and that I was regretful of was somebody else's story. And you know what happens now? This is awesome. So I made a commitment to the mother of my children that I was going to be married to her for the rest of my life. That was the commitment I made. I meant it. Through my alcoholism and the way I acted, I ran that thing into the ground. There's a part of me that will never be able to fully be fixed as a result of that. Okay? So, the universe, it's really cool. You know the kind of guys I sponsor nowadays? The kind of guys whose wives have kicked them out, getting ready to kick them out, or getting ready to kick them out and they have no idea. Or people that just really just have no idea how to have a relationship. Those are the guys I sponsor. We don't pick sponsors. Sponsors don't pick us. God does. Because there's no way that these guys can have the same exact stuff in their fourth step that I've got. There's no way that they can live life the way that they live. And for me not to be the guy that was intended to be their sponsor. No way. You experience that enough times? You experience the first three steps with a guy going, "Why am I sponsoring this dude?" And you listen to his fourth step and you're like, "Ha ha, that's why I'm sponsoring him. Because he's me. He just looks different." Hmm. This shit is cool, dudes. Way cool.
Derek, didn't you say though, if sponsor's not doing something, or you should fire
them? Time out. I do not recall saying anything like that. If we said something this weekend that contradicts what your sponsor has told you, go with your sponsor. Now, it's your life that's on the line, and if your internal, your intuition and your gut's saying something's off here, this guy's maybe not like me, I need to ask him some more questions, how do you do that, what do you mean by that? and you're starting to be led somewhere else, you need to make a decision. This is your life on the line. But I'm not directing anybody in here to do anything with their sponsor other than have a conversation. So let's get clear on that. I mean, your sponsor is right, I'm wrong as far as I'm concerned, but I'm just sharing my experience. So
I'll tell you that if he's not taking you through the steps, that you should fire him.
So but he said that, not me.
My bad.
So here, I'm going to give you a bit of his. Anybody in, who's in here is actively sponsoring right now? I'm just curious.
Okay.
You know, in early recovery, you just want sponsees. I get it. I was there one day way back when. And you just say, you know, somebody walks up to you after a meeting, will you sponsor me? You automatically say yes, you get started. And then what do you know? 2 weeks later, this guy's not calling, this guy's not doing what you've asked him to do, and you're pissed. So I'm going to give you some instruction on how to save yourself some frustration. So somebody walks up to you at a meeting and says, will you sponsor me? I go to page 94, and I do this in a conversation over a cup of coffee. Okay? I meet with a guy. I never say yes when somebody asks me to sponsor them. I say I'm willing to sit down with you and have a cup of coffee. And then I'm going to outline the program of action. I'm going to explain how I made a self-appraisal, how I straightened out my past, and why I'm now endeavoring to be helpful to you. It's important for you to realize that my attempt to pass this on to you plays a vital part in my own recovery. Actually, it's helping me more than I'm helping you. I make it plain that you are under no obligation to me, that I only hope that you will help other people, help other addicts and alcoholics once you escape your own difficulty. I suggest how important it is that you place the welfare of other people ahead of your own. I make it clear that you're under no pressure, that you don't need to see me again if you don't want to. You shouldn't be offended if I'm not offended if you want to call it off, for you've helped me more than I've helped you. If when our talk is over and it's been quiet and full of understanding, I've perhaps made a friend. Maybe I've even disturbed you about the question of alcoholism and addiction. That is all to the good. The more hopeless you feel, the better off you are. You will be more likely to follow my directions. The book says suggestions, but I don't follow suggestions. I need directions. You suggest something to me, I ain't doing it.
I'm taking the easier, softer way every time.
So, with that being said, after I have this conversation, the first thing before the conversation is identify. I share a part of my story, and then I want to dig a little bit. I want to find out if I'm dealing with an alcoholic or a drug addict, okay? I want to find out if I'm dealing with a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, a pill popper. I get that specific in that very first encounter. And then what I do is I give them 48 hours to 72 hours. So if I'm meeting with a guy at lunch at a Starbucks at 12 o'clock on a Friday, I'll be like, hey, if you want to go through with this work that I just described to you, because I give them a description of what it's going to be like if I'm going to be their sponsor, you're going to call me every day until I tell you otherwise. You're going to meet with me at least 2 to 3 hours a week. You have to go to one of these two meetings or I'm not going to sponsor you. And I set the pace. You don't get to set the pace. That means when I give you a deadline or you give yourself a deadline on something and you don't meet it, I will no longer be your sponsor. Because addicts and alcoholics love to operate with impunity. That means without consequences. If I'm your sponsor, you're going to get a consequence. I won't be your sponsor anymore. That's your consequence. That's just the way that I have found very effective in dealing with alcoholics and addicts.
What, yep. What if the program that they're in doesn't allow them to go to a meeting that you require?
I don't know.
I don't really run into that often. I've actually run into that with a program that you guys might be familiar with, where there was IOP and group and whatever else that were not. I had talked to the people that ran the program, asked for a waiver, if I could come pick him up and take him to a meeting that I go to. Got the waiver, the guy fired me. I am happy when somebody fires me. Because that saves me all that time of going through all of the experience and then you not doing shit because you can't hook up with me. How much time did that guy save me, right?
Hours.
Yeah. I mean, I commit for usually 2 hours every meeting with a guy, and we meet once a week. And you're gonna crap out on me on the fourth step? Crap out on the first step, please. Save me the time. I've got a wife, 4 kids, a bunch of chickens, pigs, goats. full-time job that requires me to travel a bunch of time. I don't need to be dicking around with somebody that's not serious about this. And I tell them just that. We've got a set time. You meet me at this time. You miss two consecutive meetings, you're gone. I'll give you a pass for one. You call ahead, you tell me. Call ahead is not, we're supposed to meet at 7 and you're calling me at 6:45. Hey man, I'm not going to make it tonight. Hey, go fuck yourself. Call me the day before. Cool. Life happens. Now, obviously, accidents, whatever. We're cool with that. But you're not wasting my time. And what happens, it's magical for me, is I get sponsees to replace sponsees that haven't even fired me before they fire me. I've had guys ask me on Sunday night, will you sponsor me, saying, you know, I'm really feeling drawn to you, but I don't have any time. Let me think about it. Monday, I get fired by a guy. Call the guy that called me on Sunday. Hey, look, I got an opening. Come on. God's cool. God takes care of stuff before I have a problem.
Guys,
magical.
I know this sounds harsh, but the big book says it. You know, don't waste your time on someone who is unwilling to work with you. That's all we're trying. We're trying to share our best practices with you and save you some frustration. Now, if you're anything like me, you're going to try to sponsor the world. That's what I did in early recovery. And it was not sustainable. Sponsoring 6-7 guys at a time is not sustainable. And I got burned out on it, and I started to suffer in my own recovery. But then I found this new teacher, and he showed me a lot.
We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. You don't want to spend time with me? Cool, somebody else does. I'm okay with that. Fire my ass.
What page is that?
96. Job or no job, wife or no wife. Job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Over and over and over in this book, it talks about the fact that spiritual's got to get worked out first. If you start experiencing maybe just a hint of what Tarek and I were talking about in 10 and 11, in this intuitive thought, how easy do you think it's going to be for you to find a job? If you just get a hint of that intuitive thought, probably pretty easy, right? Does it make sense to maybe work the steps and then figure out that whole living situation later on?
Can I do this?
Yeah.
Page 124. Look, I love these back chapters. I wish Brandon and I had some more time. Working with others is just really about a 12-step call that's divided up into two separate meetings. Okay, that's what that chapter is really about. The chapter to the wives is incredible. It's called to the wives, but it can be to the girlfriend, to the boyfriend, to the husband, to the sister, to the brother. All of the information in there applies to anyone that's tied to an alcoholic or addict by affection or blood. The family afterwards is incredible because it actually shares with the family the importance of letting the alcoholic or addict have his head in those early days of convalescence where you're healing and you're spiritually intoxicated and you've discovered what helping people does for you. And then a lot of families get really resentful and jealous because they watch AA or God or recovery do something in a very short amount of time that the family's been trying to make happen for years. And so that chapter actually instructs the family, hey, give him his head for a little while, but in a few months, if he doesn't circle back, something's off with his recovery, because it says that we demonstrate these principles in our homes, occupations, and affairs in that order, so you circle back to the family, because a recovery that doesn't include the family is no recovery at all. Okay? So, I love the family afterward. Chapter to the employers is actually a better chapter for sponsorship than working with others is. You know, some people hearing this may say it's heresy, but that chapter, the way they're asking the employer to ask questions to the employee, those are the best questions to ask someone you're taking through the steps. So I would encourage you to look through that chapter. Now on page 124, Henry Ford once made a wise remark to the effect that experience is the thing of supreme value in life. That is true only if one is willing to turn the past to good account. We grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. So we take blameworthy traits and convert them into praiseworthy traits. The alcoholic and addict's past thus becomes the principal asset of every family, and frequently it's almost the only one. This painful past may be of infinite value to other families still struggling with their problem. We think each family which has been relieved owes something to those who have not. And when the occasion requires, each member of it should be only too willing to bring former mistakes, no matter how grievous, out of their hiding places. Showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for someone else, and you can shine light into their darkness. I was doing a big book workshop about a month ago. There's maybe 80, 90 people in this workshop. And I asked a question. I said, and you guys can play along with me, but you have Brandon and Chris, so this is a little bit different because most treatment centers don't have a Brandon or a Chris at them, and you're going to understand what I'm talking about. I asked everyone in the room, I said, who here has been to treatment before for alcoholism or drug addiction? Every hand in the room almost went up. I said, who has been to treatment more than one time? Almost every hand stayed up. And then I asked the most important question. In your trips to treatment, did any representative of that program tell you that if you fit the description of the alcoholic and addict in the big book and that you had lost control of your addiction and you couldn't stay away from your addiction, no matter how great the necessity or the wish to do so, that you were going to have to work the 12 steps and then you were going to have to sacrifice personal time out of your life to show other people how to work the 12 steps and that was going to be key in your permanent recovery? Anybody ever tell you that? Not one hand went up. And that's what we're dealing with. It's like a hidden truth or a hidden secret or something. We want you to do everything under the sun. We call ourselves a 12-step-based program. What that means is, hey, go to your meetings, get your sponsor, work your steps. We're not really going to hold you all that accountable to it. We want you to do all this other stuff. And it burns me up. It really does. Somebody's got to tell you guys the truth. And the truth is, if you fit the description, that's the disclaimer, you have to fit the description in this big book. You're going to have to sponsor people through the 12 steps, and that's going to be a personal sacrifice. And then it's very likely that you'll get clean, stay clean, and die clean.
Does anybody doubt when Kelsey was telling her story this morning and she was talking about that she was going to meetings and she was doing all this stuff, does anybody doubt that she was really trying to get clean and sober? I mean, I believed her. Did anybody hear? It wasn't until she did them out of this book and started carrying this message to other people that it actually clicked, because that's what I heard. And what's funny to me is that I've only known Kelsey probably for about a year. And the woman that was in front of you, the way that she was speaking and her demeanor and everything else, that's all I know of her, right? I haven't heard her speak before. I've heard she was an awesome speaker, but I hadn't heard her speak before. So I just thought that she's just this wonderful, you know, Kelsey that just had her baby and wonderful relationship with her husband, and like that's who she is. And then you hear the rest of this and it's like, whoa. Getting hooked up through this book and then taking that hookup to somebody else is what gives me that opportunity. Presented the opportunity for me to know the Kelsey that you guys saw today. How cool is that? Because, I mean, I have no doubt in my mind that what she described was only a snapshot of how chaotic that was.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, to live that life over and over and over again, and then to have the life that she has today?
Miracle.
Something had to happen big, right? I mean, like, because, like, she's awesome. Right? And it's carrying this her experience of that to you guys this morning that maybe made you guys realize, well, wait, she doesn't look like the person that she described over the last multiple years. Something's happened. Something's happened. Weird.
So you guys would probably agree with me if I said that our years in addiction, active addiction, especially the tail end of it, is probably the darkest, you know, some of the darkest things we've ever experienced. Not to say that recovery can't include a lot of darkness, because I'm here to tell you that it can. But the wonderful thing about that darkness is it converts from a liability, which is probably a liability right now for you if you're sitting in a program. That's just the reality, okay? You weren't on a winning streak before you came to Sober Men Living. And now you're here, and that liability can be converted into an asset if you work the 12 step. Because you're going to be able to touch people. Your truth, your light inside that actually emits from your darkness, you can use that to touch someone else. And I'm telling you guys, I grow more spiritually when I watch someone change while I'm working the 12 steps with them. Why is that? Because I get the touch, I get the feel, I get the taste, and I get to witness the regenerative power of God as I watch other people change. You watch the light come on in somebody. I've seen it in some of you guys this weekend. You see that light that's just emitting in the eye and it's burning, and you're like, yeah, that guy's hungry. He's hungry. Right, and then you just keep feeding, and you keep directing them to the river. Right, at first, Brandon and I have been bringing handfuls of water to you from the river, and now, as we let you guys go, we're asking you to go to the river. The best way to the river is through sponsorship.
Now, it doesn't look like a lot of you. Well, maybe some of you do, but being a dad or a parent and watching these little entities grow and flourish in life is like one of the most fascinating and cool things that you could possibly ever experience for those that have it. And being a dad is one of the coolest things that I've ever experienced. But that transformation is really slow. With sponsees, when you're taking a guy through the steps, that stuff happens. A new person shows up in a month, 2 months, 3 months. I mean, guys, it's so freaking awesome. Because it's like one day, I mean, my buddy Ken back there, like Ken had that, he was that model of willingness. Like I sponsored him for like a month or 2 months over the phone while he was in Peachford, right? We were talking every day. We were talking through some stuff. He came out. We actually met. I had never laid eyes on each other, right? We sit down and we start working the steps. And somewhere within like a month or two, like he walks in a meeting with me one day, and it's just like, I'm telling you guys, it was a different dude. A different dude walked in the meet. His energy was completely different, and it was just like, now that's Ken's body, but who's in there? And now he's doing that with others.
Mm-hmm. Real quick,
mm-hmm.
And Brandon, you may agree with me that on some level, every time you see Ken, you're reminded of that.
Oh, 100% of the time.
And that's the beauty of sponsorship. So, you know, Brandon and I have been sponsoring people for quite some time, so we've been blessed to have guys in our lives that we've sponsored that have changed and have caught fire. There's one kid on my mind. I met him in 2010 or 11, and I remember he had come back from a relapse. I was taking a meeting to a treatment center, And this kid was just oozing all of the negativity and darkness of early sobriety, fresh back from a relapse. And so, you know, he approached me, and at the time when he asked me to sponsor him, I had enough respect for him to know I didn't have the time to give him the time that he needed, so I handed him off to another guy, one of my sponsor brothers. And they worked the steps together real quick. Eventually, he had come back to me. He goes, "Now will you be my sponsor?" And I've been his sponsor ever since. And this kid went from being a tech, no, working at the desk at LA Fitness. This is 5 years ago. Working at the desk at LA Fitness is now the CEO of a treatment center in New Mexico in 5 years. And every time I lay my eyes on this kid, you know, beside the fact he's absolutely one of my favorite people on this earth, I witness God. Every time, because immediately my mind goes back to the night I met him, and I was like, good God, that is such a drastic transformation. And that's what sponsorship can tap into.
And you want to, guys, in this, so because of his experience, that guy that's now the CEO, other people up in Alpharetta saw him transform and then followed him to Spearheads, because wherever that guy's going to meetings, I want to go there because I want that to happen to me. One of those guys that followed him to Spearheads was the first guy that took me through the steps. Want to transform the planet? Get sober. We had this retreat back in April that Bill Brown referred to him last night. This guy, Gary Brown, he's got 52 years sobriety. And he and this guy, Bob Olson, came and did a retreat for us in April. And we had this wild hair of, God, I wonder how many people are connected to Gary in this room. And so I asked Gary if he'd play along for a little while. And I think he thought we were going to do some sort of like worship kind of thing of him. But it was, that's not really what, so I said, Gary, will you please stand on the top step? Anybody that has been sponsored by Gary, stand on the second step. Anybody that's been sponsored by somebody that's been sponsored by Gary, stand on the third step. Fourth step. Fifth step. Anybody that's been sponsored by all those people, come stand. 90% of the room, 75% of the people that were at the retreat were at the front of the room. One guy. There were, how many people were there?
103.
103 people there. So there were probably 75 people at least standing
maybe
at the front of
the room. Maybe a little less than that. But it's not to stroke him at all. He just carried the message, and that message was carried, and it sort of just, what's the word I'm looking for? It gets tentacles and just spreads. It just spreads from there. It's a magnificent thing to watch. I've been blessed to watch it at our groups, at the Monday night group and the Thursday night group. We have a lot of people that are active and working steps. And here's why. I'm going to read something on page 128 to you guys. This is talking about the father when he gets spiritually intoxicated because he's helping people in early recovery, and the family thinks he's unbalanced. So he's not so unbalanced as they might think. Many of us have experienced dad's elation. We have indulged in spiritual intoxication like a gaunt prospector belt drawn in over the last ounce of food. Our pick strikes gold. Joy it released from a lifetime of frustration knew no bounds. Father feels like he struck something better than gold. For a time, he may try to hug the new treasure to himself. He may not see at once that he's barely scratched a limitless load which will pay dividends only if each of us minds it for the rest of our lives, and we each insist on giving away the entire product. That's what we do here. Everything you find here, we're asking you to turn around and give it away. Counterintuitive, that's not how they live out in the real world.
Page 100. First full paragraph. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to pass when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. Okay? Life can't really throw a whole lot of stuff at a spiritually fit person that they can get over. And it actually says that on the bottom of the page if we read on. Assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things that we are not supposed to do. I'm going to read that first part of that sentence again because it's that important. Assuming we are spiritually fit. Okay? People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures. Those are movies, guys. Which show drinking scenes. We must not go to the barber shop. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic or addict who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic or addict mind. There is something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety is someplace like the Greenland ice cap, and even there an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory that he would escape the alcoholic problem. The relapse ends with the first drink or hit. It ends then. It starts when you're not spiritually fit. The spiritual malady starts breeding the obsession. The obsession gets on you. You drink or use. This book is not intended for the sunny days where nothing is wrong. These steps are not intended for when you feel fine. This path is intended for when you don't want to feel at all. If you can tell me the exact circumstances that will lead to your relapse, then you don't have to do this stuff. If you don't know, you probably need to work these steps. You probably need to sponsor people. You probably need to pray. You probably need to meditate. If you can't tell me which one of those things can be removed and you still be okay, then you don't have any power.
Throughout the time I was married, I tried to stick to a rule of only sponsoring two guys at the same time through the steps, like active sponsorship where they're actually working steps. And from time to time I'd go up to three, and I'd catch hell for it, and then I'd, get them good three real quick. So I did this song and dance for a while. But then, in the span of 1 month, I was sleeping. I didn't have a place to call home. My wife and daughter were gone, and my father passed away. And all of a sudden, I found myself sponsoring four guys. And God was keeping me safe and protected. And I'm not saying I had to sponsor those guys, but it kept me spiritually active. Later on in a Vision for You, they talk about in order to stay spiritually active, Bill and Bob would go down to the hospital to talk to a drunk. And amazingly, they would be lifted up on their feet afterwards, spiritually. And there were many nights during these last few months where I had to meet with sponsees, and there was like a period of 3 weeks where I was meeting with them. I had a sponsee every night of the week, and then I got hit with three fifth steps at the same time. And there was a voice in my head saying, God, I don't want to do this. But then afterwards, after every session, I felt spiritually lifted up. It's amazing how that part of the process works. And that's what we're trying to excite you guys about here, is you can give a meaning to the darkness that you've been through and turn it into a magnificent jewel. It can become a magnificent jewel for you to start helping other people, no matter what your path has looked like. Those of us on page 130, those of us who have spent much time in the world of spiritual make-believe have eventually seen the childishness of it. This dream world has been replaced by a great sense of purpose, accompanied by a growing consciousness of the power of God in our lives. We have come to believe God would like us to keep our head in the clouds with Him, but that our feet ought to be firmly planted on the earth. That is where our fellow travelers are. That is where the addicts and alcoholics are. That is where our work must be done. These are the realities for us. We have found nothing incompatible between a powerful spiritual experience and a life of sane and happy usefulness. Guys, it is dangerous for anyone sitting in this room to ever feel useless, to ever feel bored, to ever feel like you don't have a sense of purpose, to begin to lack proportion and the ability to think straight, and to experience a sense of isolation. Those are that like danger, Will Robinson, danger. And I have found sponsorship is the key that unlocks so many doors. I'm convinced that all of the success, financially and personally, that I've experienced over these 10 years is directly tied to the amends I've made and the men I've sponsored. I've always had more money than I've needed. I've always been taken care of. I've always had wonderful relationships. I have had tremendous struggle, and the struggle is sacred for me. But I am convinced that as you begin to give, 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 you've got the universe throws more at you than you can take. And then your job in turn is to give it all away again. It's amazing. And
a clogged pipe, nothing passes through. A pipe that's flowing, things freely flow through. Mm-hmm. As you give it away, it comes in faster and faster, and it accelerates and it builds upon itself. If you don't sponsor, and you've been sponsored, you're a big turd stuck in a pipe. Just a second.
So how do we keep our head in the clouds? That really funky, cool stuff we talked about in the previous session about steps 10 and 11 and all these wonderful books. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. You can keep your head up in the clouds. How do you keep your feet firmly planted on the ground? Sponsor. Sponsor new addicts and new alcoholics. That's it right there. Keep your feet firmly planted on the ground. We need you guys. Believe it or not, there's not a lot of people out there working steps. Otherwise, we'd have a hell of a lot more people staying clean and sober. So we need you.
Page 133. We are sure God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. We cannot subscribe to the belief that this life is a vale of tears, though it once was just that for many of us. But it is clear that we made our own misery. God didn't do it. Avoid then the deliberate manufacture of misery. But if trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it on an opportunity to demonstrate His omnipotence. If somebody asked me, if you could real quick explain how life works, real quick, all of life, how would you explain it? My easiest explanation is that anything that we encounter, we have two choices. You can have the experience and learn from it, or you can reject the experience. And the good news is, experience it again, over and over and over and over and over. Now, each one of those times, you may pick something new up, but it's really pass-fail. So, if you've been here multiple times, and you've done this multiple times, and you keep getting the same results, maybe you've learned some things. Maybe you realize you have to change some things. But you keep experiencing it. You haven't learned what you needed to learn enough to not experience it again. If you've not sponsored and taken somebody through this experience and deepened your experience with whatever this power that exists in the universe is, then you're going to keep doing what you're doing. And until you get to a place where you see value in changing your perspective, we hope you make it back. You might not. And that's okay. Because somebody else can learn from you not making it back. Mm. All the time. The guy in the corner that's complaining about everything in life, and you hear him share when they're talking about the fourth step that he's never done a fourth step. Thank you. Because he looks miserable and everybody sees it. He's serving a purpose. The question is, are you going to be the good example or the bad example? Because you're going to be an example. Mm. Do you want to pull people with the vision of what life can be? Or do you want to show them how life is for you? It's up to you. Up to you.
Page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come. If your own house is in order, there's a conditional statement. No house in order, no answers will come. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. So see to it that your relationship with God is right, not your ex-girlfriend, and not your future girlfriend, not mom and dad, not your employer, that see that your relationship with God is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. So this is a narrative of the step work. So there are two fellowships out there, guys and gals. There's the spirit of the fellowship. We met it on page 17, Common Problem. First layer of healing that you experience when you enter into our fellowship, somebody tells part of your story, you no longer feel alone. But like I said yesterday, the fellowship's like a warm bath. It doesn't last for long. And then there's the club within the club, as my friend Mike says. And I really dig, because the club in the club has entrance requirements. You don't get to get into the club in the club without doing what it says right here. And if you do that, you will be in the fellowship of the Spirit. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. The road is the destiny. And the fellowship of the Spirit is when you're at a meeting in another city or another country and someone is carrying a message that was carried to them and you hear it and you immediately connect. And I have had this happen to me. It's the most amazing experience. It cannot be described. You can experience it around Metro Atlanta. You'll hear somebody and you're like, man, I know what he's talking about.
That's it.
And it's this. These are the entry. This is the steps here, guys. Nothing more but a narrative of working steps. So what me and Brandon and I want to do is encourage you to join us in the fellowship of the Spirit. Join us on the broad highway. Don't listen to conventional party line AA or CA or HA or CMA or whatever fellowship you're in. Okay, don't listen to that. There is a lot of bullshit. And you must have a bullshit sifter. And I call the bullshit sifter the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? So I'm going to go ahead and thank you for having us out here. Brandon is going to say a few words. I think you guys have done a great job of being attentive. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Woo! Woo! Yeah!
Enough for me. So, thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you.